Good morning, University of Manitoba campus, and welcome to UMFM's information and entertainment program, Your Campus Today, for Wednesday, October 31st, the final day of Spooktober. I'm going to be your host, David Tufane. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11:30 a.m., we bring you all the U of M news that's fit for your ears, plus keep you in the loop on just a few of the great events going on here at the U of M campus that you need to know about. On today's show, the Dean's Lecture Series examines flaws in the education system, an innovative new architecture program aims to quell the housing crisis in the north, and we're joined by UMFM alumnus and now assistant professor of ethnomusicology at the University of California, Riverside, Liz Shelbilski, to talk about her research into indigenous hip-hop and her upcoming lectures on campus at the Crescent Fort Rouge United Church this Friday and Saturday as part of the Desautels Faculty of Music's Indigenous Intersections Week. All this and more up next right here on Your Campus Today. Winnipeg educators gathered to discuss flaws in the education system, including lack of representation at Fourth Cafe last Tuesday. The lecture was part of the U of M's Extended Education Division's Dean's Lecture Series. Dean of Extended Ed Gary Hepburn said the lecture intended to bring current thinking as well as information about initiatives to the city of Winnipeg. Speakers included Dorota Blumchinska, Executive Director of the Immigrant and Refugee Committee of Manitoba, and Jordan Bighorn, Program Manager of Pathways to Education at the Community Education Development Association, or CEDA. U of M Native Studies Professor Negan Sinclair also spoke at the lecture. One of the main issues raised addressed where the speakers believed Indigenous students and students new to Canada are being failed in the education system. The biggest challenge that we face within our community is that the education has been the most brutal, violent, coercive, and assimilative tool for Indigenous peoples, Sinclair said. Blumchinska noted that Indigenous and new Canadian students often fail to see themselves within the education system because of the educational material being presented. They are not able to place themselves in their educators because they're not reflected in that, Blumchinska said. They're not able to place themselves in the curriculum because it also often denies, it doesn't even touch on, their life experiences and the histories of their global communities. Bighorn spoke of the importance of curricular representation to the success of the students he works with at CEDA. The reason one student in the Pathways to Education program stayed for 9 years and graduated is because she kept being reminded of who she was when she came to see us, Bighorn said. Sinclair brought up the concept of education as a primary tool for social change. Education for social justice, to me, is doing what the education system ought to have actually been doing, which is offering young people visions of who they are, he said. Though Sinclair noted some improvements have been made to the education system, he said there is still extensive work to be done, using the typical Canadian history textbook as an example. There used to be Indigenous people 4 pages at the start of the textbook, and then they disappeared, Sinclair said in an interview. Now we have 10 pages, but we still have 450 pages that are absent of Indigenous people altogether. Sinclair noted events like Orange Shirt Day or courses on truth and reconciliation are good starts, but we're only at a very early stage in terms of understanding that it doesn't just involve the day, it's actually the entirety of the system, he said. It doesn't matter how many treaty acknowledgments we do, it doesn't matter how many shirt days we do, Sinclair explained. Those are just the days that facilitate the conversations to talk about things like power, to talk about change, and how we actually implement those changes. An innovative new training program aims to address the housing crisis in remote First Nations communities by using materials and residents who are already in communities. A group of 20 students from Garden Hill First Nations and another 20 from Wasagamak First Nation will learn how to build homes in their communities as part of Boreal Home Builders, a partnership of the University of Manitoba, the two communities, and the Anokiwin Training Institute. Over the course of 15 months, the students will receive vocational training on how to build houses from scratch, cutting and preparing the timber themselves to finish, with each community ultimately getting 2 new houses. U of M professor Shirley Thompson visited the communities with architects and architecture students last week to start developing the houses and designing them in culturally appropriate ways. Some of the students in the communities had their own design ideas, many of which incorporated the sun and the environment to make homes more sustainable, Thompson explained. It's so wonderful to see the creativity, the potential in these students to change the situation, she told us. The two Island Lakes area First Nations, which are accessible only by plane or winter road, were chosen for the project because they have some of the worst housing situations in the province, Thompson said. During their visit to the communities, facilitators saw one home with 14 people living in it and another with 23 people under one roof. It's not uncommon for people to sleep in shifts because there aren't enough beds, Thompson said. The hope is that if the program is successful in Garden Hill and Wazagamac, it can be duplicated in other First Nations communities, Thompson said. If we can do it in these fly-in remote communities that are very economically poor, we can take it anywhere, she said. When the current Engineering and Information Technology campus were under construction, Jerry Price stepped forward with a generous offer. He would supply all the ventilation equipment required for the project. He joked that when students looked up, he wanted them to see a Price diffuser. All humor aside, the gesture was characteristic of Jerry Price and his wife Barb's decades-long support of the U of M, which is far-reaching and large in scale, and a gesture that was replicated last night at a reception in EITC. There, 66 students were celebrated as the first recipients of the inaugural Price Scholarships in Engineering, the Price family's latest gift of $1 million. This is not the first time Price, a member of the president's campaign team, has given back to his alma mater or to the Front and Center campaign. In 2016, the Price family and Price Industries donated $1.25 million toward teaching and learning spaces, scholarships, and NGAP, Canada's most successful engineering access program. The Price Scholarships in Engineering are the fifth student awards established by the Price family. Price has said that money has never been his objective in life, but rather a byproduct of a successful business. He is happy to grow a legacy measured not by wealth, but by how many people have benefited, and it is clear that he and Barb believe that the U of M is beneficial for students and Manitoba. In addition to providing financial support for engineering education, which Price has said teaches you work ethic, persistence, and a systemic approach to problem solving, he has also strengthened the link between the U of M and professional engineers, architects, designers, and business community in Manitoba. He is a founder of Friends of Engineering, the Partners Program in the Faculty of Architecture, and the Associates of the Asper School of Business. In 2011, Jerry and Barb were named Outstanding Philanthropists of the Year by the Manitoba Association of Fundraising Professionals. To have watched the global rise of the Price Group of companies is to know that Jerry Price is one of Manitoba's most successful innovators, says Jonathan Beddoes, Dean of Engineering and Dean Faculty of Architecture at the University of Manitoba. We are honored that he has chosen to shape the next generation of innovators here in the Faculty of Engineering through his generous support of our students from the moment they join our faculty through to their final year of education. Start creating career opportunities to do the work you love and create the life you want to live. Career Month is your chance to explore career pathways, meet with industry professionals, and make connections to help you gain experience that will build your marketable skills. There are over 20 events on campus to help you navigate your career decisions, connect with industry partners, or learn what the current labor market is like in Manitoba. The fun starts on November 1st with the Career Month kickoff in UMSU University Center. Grab a snack and a coffee, that's tomorrow, and learn about the full suite of activities happening on and off campus. Take time during this month to reflect on who you are, how your personality and interests fit with your education and future work possibilities, and explore opportunities to help you continue to build your career. Remember, your career starts before graduation, so learn how to actively plan. Keep your eyes open for opportunities and create opportunity for yourself during your degree. Start designing your career early. Attend the Arts Roundtable on November the 6th to hear about the career journeys of arts alumni and gain valuable insight and guidance. Go to one or more of the career workshops offered. Luck isn't everything. Creating your own career opportunities, networking, career choices, figuring out your future, or entrepreneurship, to mention few. Meet with industry experts on November the 20th at a career cafe to chat one-on-one and get their professional opinion on resume, cover letter, CV, online presence, how to present in an interview, and get advice about gaining experiences that are transferable across occupations. Check out the Volunteer Manitoba Volunteer Fair on November the 27th to find opportunities to develop skills and explore interests. Career Services is here to assist you in mapping a plan to create the life you want and live to do the work you love to do. Visit us at 474 University Center or use our online resources. With a little planning and some hard work, you can boost your career and pave the way to multiple opportunities. To learn more about Career Month activities and what Career Services offers, visit our website at umanitoba.ca/student/career services. And to close out Your Campus Today, special correspondent Michael Elves talks to assistant professor of ethnomusicology at the University of California, Riverside, Liz Shelbilski, about her research into indigenous hip-hop and her upcoming lectures on campus and at Crescent Fort Rouge United Church this Friday and Saturday as part of the De Sotelle's Faculty of Music's Indigenous Intersections Week. You can also find De Sotelle's Faculty of Music's Indigenous Intersections Week on Post-Ed. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm going to be back Friday to wrap up the week that was November the 2nd. As always, I've been me, you've been you. My name is David Tufane, and this has been Your Campus Today.
All right, well, we are joined on Your Campus Today by Liz Shelbilski, the Assistant Professor of Ethnomusicology at the University of California, Riverside, who is coming to the University of Manitoba as part of a transformative dialogue on Indigenous intersections that De Sotelle Faculty of Music is inviting all members of the campus to. Welcome, Liz.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking some time. Now, you're in the midst of doing a similar presentation at Brandon University. Is the kind of agenda the same for both presentations, or are you doing kind of like two different things while you're here?
Yeah, so I'm speaking on a related topic in both places, just kind of shifting to the overall arc of what's happening at Brandon and what'll be happening at the U of M. So as a whole, what I'll be talking about is the way that media, specifically radio, plays a role in the way we hear cities and urban spaces as being indigenous and what exactly sonic indigeneity might sound like and do.
So how did you come to the field of researching sonic indigeneity?
Yeah, it's a sort of a funny story of how I came into it. I'm from Chicago and I was doing my grad work in Chicago, and a friend of mine was working at the American Indian Center. And she had just asked for some technical help with a project. There was a group that was putting together a hip hop show, and I said that I would be willing to lend a hand. But what I found out when I was there was that it was a really rich and interesting conversation about being heard and being heard in an urban soundscape. And we were looking for ways for the young people who were putting on that show to get the sound out further. And we didn't have a lot of models in Chicago specifically, so I started listening for where is this happening. And as you can imagine, my ears turned to Winnipeg and to Canada more broadly.
So as someone who, you know, was from Chicago and obviously steeped in sort of the hip-hop scene there, coming to a place like Winnipeg and to Canada in general and looking at the hip-hop in this country, do you see kind of overlap or creep within sort of the styles, or is it like a wholly different thing because of the lived experience of the indigenous population?
Sure. I think one of the really exciting things about hip-hop as genre, especially now, is that it has become localized in places around the globe. And I think everywhere we go, we can hear a unique regional way that hip hop can be a voice in specific communities. But I think it is also clear when listening that there has been a cross-pollination of musical styles and of kind of related experiences across the U.S.-Canada border. And I think especially for indigenous groups and other groups of people who live around the border and for whom the border might not be quite as transformational as it is in sort of a geopolitical sense, that sounds move very freely across space.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of your research into the indigenous hip hop, like, are you looking at kind of historically, like which acts kind of were the forebears of contemporary indigenous hip hop, or, you know, are you talking to current artists about how they got into it? What does your research look like?
Yeah, I think I'm lucky to be coming into a small but growing area. So there are other people who have done a little bit more of a longitudinal study of looking back into the 90s, especially to think about where a kind of an indigenous hip hop, possibly subgenre, might have come from and how that might have developed. I've done a little bit of that work myself, but mostly what I'm interested in doing is talking directly with artists and with media producers about, for artists, how they craft their music, what they're getting across, and how it makes meaning now, and with media producers, what it means to circulate that music, especially to a mixed indigenous and non-indigenous listenership today.
In talking to the artists themselves, are you looking at both like kind of content and process? Like, are they kind of equally treated as necessary or important parts of the study?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why I think my training in ethnomusicology is really helpful. I think there's a certain amount of rich knowledge that we can gain from listening to a music as a piece of text, but I think it's really enhanced when we get to listen to the people who make it and share it about what kinds of contextual information adds to the kind of aesthetic aspect of it.
Right. Now, when you go to talk to an artist, do you have like a clear goal in mind in terms of like questions you want to ask them? Or is it more like, do you treat it as a conversation and try to kind of suss things out from them by, you know, dint of what they say, maybe leading you down a path? Like, how do you approach those kind of conversations?
Sure. I like to have open-ended conversations. I think I bring a certain set of tools as a scholar, which are helpful. But really the reason that I'm speaking with artists and media professionals is because they bring their own knowledge and even theory to the music that they make and share, and I want to make sure I'm open to hearing that. Also, in addition to having direct conversations, I like to go to shows, be at public events. I work with online presences, social media, other avenues where artists are crafting and sharing messages, so that I get a nuanced view of the whole picture of how this music is working.
When you say it's working, what do you define as working?
I guess what I mean by that is the work that the music is doing in the world. So the kinds of effects that it is having.
Right. Now, as someone who's, you know, coming at it from a scholastic point of view and applying it to something that, you know, very often can change or morph or you know, pivot very quickly in the world of hip hop. Like, how do you account for that in scholarship? Like, how do you kind of keep tabs on something that can change so rapidly?
Yeah, I think the study of popular music in general gives us a lot of cues for how to do that, because in many ways, the story of popular music is the story of social change over time. And that is true in hip hop. It's true in subgenres and specific communities. And it's also true of this larger arc of popular culture. And so I think that's kind of an asset and a feature of studying hip hop and pop music in general.
Right. Now, you're going to be doing the pre-concert lecture at the Crescent Fort Rouge on November 3rd. Is there a specific topic around Indigenous hip-hop, like one sort of like thrust of the presentation, or is it like kind of a general overview of your work, or like what's kind of on the agenda?
Yeah, so for that, this weekend, the vocal group Camerata Nova will be presenting two concerts dedicated to truth and reconciliation. And they'll be featuring the premiere of Andrew Balfour's, he's a Cree composer, his new work, Notinicu. And the pre-concert talk that we'll be doing, it's actually Andrew and I will be speaking together. So first, he's going to be talking about what it was like to put that together for him as a composer and also for him as an Indigenous person speaking into a moment when a lot of people are remembering the 100-year anniversary of World War One and thinking more broadly about Indigenous heroes and maybe some of the forgotten Indigenous heroes who have fought for Canada and served in that way. And then what I'll be doing after Andrew gives us his take and his situated viewpoint there is putting that in a little bit of a larger context around some of the ways that we're hearing narratives of Indigenous and non-Indigenous collaboration in this kind of truth and reconciliation moment. And then Andrew and I will be having a bit of a conversation about the piece.
Now, before that, you'll be here on campus on Friday at 1:30 at Taché Hall. The topic for that day is Radio Silence, Changing Mediascapes, Hip-Hop, and the Future of Indigenous Sonic Sovereignty. Usually, if I'm talking to an artist, I get them to pick a track off of their most recent record. Before I let you go, is there a particular track that you wanted to feature for listeners?
Wow, that is a big question and a hard one. But I think something that might be interesting for us is to listen to the changing career and really rich and varied sonic output of rapper Lorenzo, who then had a kind of a genre shift and has started performing around the world under his given name Leonard Sumner. And I think we could probably pick an earlier Lorenzo track and a more recent Leonard Sumner song to think about that story of change over time that I was mentioning earlier.
All right, well, that is Friday, November 2nd at Taché, 1:30 p.m. It is a free talk. Liz Cebulski, thanks very much for taking some time to join us on your campus today.
Thank you so much.
Sing your death song and die like a hero. Going home.
They say they wounded my soul. They say my land is their home. Dig up my ancestors' bones, but they won't silence my song. Sometimes it hurts to be Indigenous, born in this nation, not enough to talk about decolonization. In the battles with myself, I'm continually facing, feel the stress of the world on my shoulders, I'm fading. But I ain't going out yet, this is just the outset, cause I ain't making change if I'm rapping about an outfit. Less it's that camo, intelligence is ammo, modern day warrior, just call me Rambo. Not trying to be deceitful, mostly I'm peaceful, and sick of me, I'm tired of being seen as unequal, waiting for the bitch as I'm stepping to the plate. They saying that we, but we live in second rate. Well, they don't like the truth, so that's what I'm coming with. Repping for the youth, yeah, that's who I'm running with. Don't represent leadership, I represent empowerment. Working on the ground, cause I have issues with the government. Who issue out apologies while sticking to the policy? More definite than probably that left us in the policy. Wanna tell me how to live and how to react? The devastation of my culture, trying to keep it intact while living on the rules of the Indian Act. Indian agents were just racist, I'm just stating the facts. They took my identity, I'm taking it back. I am Anishinaabe, I belong to the land. I don't belong to the queen, so as long as I dream, that means I sleep with a song that forever will be sung from the heart, so whenever I speak, the truth comes out and it's setting me free. I don't belong to the queen, so as long as I dream, that means I sleep with a song that forever will be sung from the heart, so whenever I speak, the truth comes out and it's setting me free. There's a lot that I carry, so much I wanna bury. Sometimes I wonder to myself, why can't I just be happy? I'm living with the memories that's running in my blood, loaded in my bones and buried in the mud. But music is my medicine, my life is the evidence. I realize it ever since my people call me prevalent. Coming from the resi-res with words of intelligence. And if I wasn't hell on, they might say I was heaven sent.
They say they wounded my soul. They say my land is their home. Dig up my ancestors' bones,
Your Campus Today is a collaborative production between UM Today, the Manitoban, the Department of Student Life, and this station, UMFM 101.5. Thanks for listening, folks. If you have a story you'd like us to feature or want to send in feedback, please email us at campustoday@umfm.com.